Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Elevate Your Energy Radio. This is Evelyn Lambrecht from ElevateYourEnergy.com. Today's show is all about digestion. So if you have any issues with acid reflux, gas, bloating, other gut issues, or things like fatigue, brain fog, skin issues, stay tuned. I'm interviewing my friend, Dr. Lauren Noel. So we're just going to jump right into it today. Dr. Lauren Noel is a licensed naturopathic doctor and expert in natural medicine. She received her doctorate in naturopathic medicine from National College of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon. Since 2010, Dr. Noel has treated over 5,000 patients using natural therapies. Her areas of expertise are digestive disorders, thyroid and hormone imbalances, and primal nutrition. She has been a frequent guest and lecturer on health radio shows and medical conferences, and she is the host of Dr. Low Radio, a top-rated podcast on iTunes that has attracted over 400,000 listens. She's the owner of Shine Natural Medicine in San Diego, where she treats patients locally and throughout the U.S. To learn more about Lauren, you can go to her website, which is www.drlaurennoel.com. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, first of all, what is digestive health? Like, what are we talking about when we say that, when we use that term?
Yeah, well, I think when most people hear that, they're probably thinking, okay, like, you know, like diarrhea or constipation or like, you know, not having a stomach ache, just kind of the basics. But digestive health, it expands into so many different systems in the body. It's way, way more than just do I have a nice bowel movement, you know. So when I work with patients, I ask them so many questions about this because it affects everything from their brain to their hormones to, you know, their energy, all of that. So digestive health encompasses a lot, but essentially you want your digestion to be working smoothly. You want to be able to absorb all the nutrients in your diet. You want to make sure your stomach is nice and flat after a meal. You shouldn't be feeling like you're 6 months pregnant after you eat. You know, you should be having pretty easy bowel movements where you're not straining or pushing too hard. I mean, it should be pretty easy and seamless. So if you have any issues in those areas, then digestive health is an area you'd want to look at. And we'll kind of jump in more into, you know, how this kind of affects all the different body systems. But basically just, are you absorbing your nutrients and are you eliminating appropriately?
Mm-hmm. So I think people would actually be surprised at just how many different systems in the body the gut affects. Can you take us through the list and then we'll kind of discuss them one by one?
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's just start from head to toe. So first off, the gut and the brain are very, very closely connected. And this baffles most people when they hear this. And, you know, unless you're kind of a podcast junkie and you've listened to a lot of these different shows, then this probably doesn't come very naturally to know that the gut and the brain are connected. So brain health is huge. We know from a good amount of research that people who have digestive problems, like IBS, for example, are way more likely to have some sort of mood, you know, mood dysregulation like schizophrenia or depression or anxiety. So there's a big connection with that, with the gut and the brain.
Mm-hmm. And then what's next?
The gut and the thyroid is huge. So jumping right down to the neck, right in the front of your Adam's apple areas, your thyroid gland, and the gut and the thyroid are closely linked. You know, you can actually, if you have imbalances in your flora, for example, your gut can, or your thyroid, I should say, can be totally out of balance because you can't activate the hormones. So it seems kind of like a big disconnect. Like, how does your thyroid actually relate to your gut? But it's all connected. So dysbiosis, which is imbalance in the flora, like we want to have good bacteria in the gut. We'll get more into those details. When there's an imbalance in that, then your thyroid doesn't work appropriately. So that's that connection with those two systems. And then jumping down even further down, even like your cardiovascular system, you know, like we know in the research that dysbiosis can increase all different kinds of diseases down the line, but one is cardiovascular disease. And even things like cancer, which is kind of more widespread throughout the body. And then beyond that, let's see, what do we have next? We'll skip the gut because that's kind of obvious. We have your ovaries, so your reproductive system. You know, you have to have healthy gut flora in order to metabolize your estrogens appropriately. So if that's out of balance, then you're not going to have regular hormone cycles, basically. And then, let's see, kind of more widespread would be your gut and just general pain. And now that's one thing we kind of chatted about was that when you have, when your gut isn't working appropriately, you can actually have more pain throughout the body. So do you wake up in the morning and you just kind of feel like a rusty hinge, you know, or you need to kind of get moving because you have pain when you first wake up? Well, it actually could be related to your digestive tract, believe it or not. And the list goes on and on, but those are just a few that jump out.
So I'd love to talk about some of them in a little more detail. Let's talk about the gut and autoimmune issues. And obviously this is where like the thyroid immediately comes to mind, but also Crohn's is an autoimmune disease, right? So can you talk about those just in general?
Sure.
Or in detail?
Well, it's kind of a blanket statement to say that all autoimmune disease starts with leaky gut. And it's whenever in medicine, we very rarely actually make a cause that is statement, like where something causes something. But there's so much research in this area that it's pretty safe to say that, actually. So whenever
we're... Can you define what leaky gut means?
Sure, yeah. So leaky gut is a really simplified way of saying intestinal permeability. So intestinal, obviously your intestine, permeability, that's basically like something that, you know, we've used the analogy before of like a screen door, you know, like you naturally want, let's say, you know, oxygen to go through a screen door, just fresh air, but you don't really want a bunch of bugs or, you know, bees or mosquitoes to get through your screen door. It functions, you know, as a barrier. Well, the same thing with your digestive tract. So your gut provides a barrier between you and the outside world. So if you have a healthy gut, then it protects you from things like, you know, viruses or bacteria or parasites. But when, for various reasons, when this can get broken down, then you get holes in your screen door, and then you can start to absorb things that should not get into your circulation. So that's basically what leaky gut is. And that can cause all different kinds of problems, but it's very individualized how that can show up as disease. You know, so for one person, let's say they're now absorbing things in their circulation that they shouldn't. It's causing inflammation. It's causing pain. Maybe another person, it'll lodge into their thyroid, for example, and they'll get antibodies to their thyroid, which is also called Hashimoto's. So, you know, in other people, it can maybe lodge into their joints, and then they're going to get things like rheumatoid arthritis. So it's a very, very simplified way to kind of explain how autoimmune happens. It's very complicated, but, you know, it's widespread. And there's millions, like 20, I think it's 25 million Americans have autoimmune disease now. And it's going up like at staggering numbers.
Wow. And what causes leaky gut in the first place? How do you get it?
I love that you're asking this because it's not just, okay, the cause is leaky gut. It's like, well, what's the cause of the cause? Like, just keep going back and find what the first domino is to fall, you know? So it's really smart. And I do this a lot in my practice, is continuing to ask questions. I'm always working as a detective. It's like always asking why, like an annoying little kid, you know? So when we're looking at leaky gut, what is the cause of leaky gut? Well, it's widespread, and it changed, you know, like everybody's really different on what has contributed to theirs. But here's a few different things that are associated with an increase in leaky gut. So the first thing would be toxins. We know that we're in an increasingly toxic world. And, you know, rewind 50 years ago, we lived in a whole different planet. You know, nowadays there are thousands, hundreds and thousands of different chemicals that are in our environment, most of which haven't even been studied for what they do to the human body. So it's just a time, like we know like a tip of the iceberg of what these different toxins do. And these are all contributing to disease. And I believe that that's a large part of the leaky gut epidemic that's happening right now is from environmental toxins. Antibiotics. Most Americans have been on at least one antibiotic, but most in my practice is at least 10 or 20 even. Some people just pop them like candy when they're kids, you know? I mean, that was how it was for me when I was sick. Here's another antibiotic. Here's another Z-Pak, you know? And so this all contributes to dysbiosis or eventually, you know, leading to leaky gut. The other one is birth control pills. It's so rare that I come across a lady who has never been on birth control pills, even for like maybe 6 months. Like most women have been on them at some point. And their doctors don't tell them, this can actually cause leaky gut for you. It's never mentioned. It's like, okay, take this. It's a regular ear period. And that's pretty much it, you know. So birth control pills is another one. Medications like Advil or aspirin, These all can contribute to that as well. Let's see, what else can be associated? Oh, how about bad diets? For most people, you know? Sugar, pesticides, just the typical standard American diet is going to contribute to leaky gut.
What about stress? I know I've read this, but how exactly does that work?
Yep. It's a pretty easy connection that cortisol, so when you have an increase in cortisol, that can cause the tight junctions of your intestinal cells to become loose or leaky, basically. So we know this, like when someone has a real stressful event, like maybe like a trauma, maybe like an accident or something, when you're going to the emergency room, for example, or like a burn, like burn victims, we know this too, that they tend to have leaky gut just as a limited amount of time, but most people are under stress all the time. You know, it's not really a natural way of living that we're supposed to wake up in the morning and look at our cell phones and look at our email right away and then head to work and be, you know, in rush hour as we're driving to work. And then immediately we get to work, we get hit with emails or calls or, you know, just angry customers. And then we rush through lunch and then, you know, we rush home through rush hour and traffic, and then we go home and then we have to figure out what to do for dinner and have to deal with family stress. And so most of us are under stress from morning until night, you know, and then we just collapse into bed and then do it over again. So basically we're kind of like in the trauma unit like 24 hours a day besides when we're sleeping. So that, I mean, it, that by itself, you can have the most perfect diet, you know, you can eat organic all the time and free range and local food. But if you're having that kind of stressful lifestyle, then that right there can just contribute to your leaky gut.
Mm-hmm. I know I've had probably, you know, shows about gluten and dairy all the time, or it comes up, you know, at least once per show. But I think because we're talking about digestion, we can't skip over that. So can you talk about how gluten specifically can affect intestinal permeability?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, the newest research we know, the newest data is showing us that gluten sensitivity is in 70 to 80% of people. So, and that's not even with people who necessarily have symptoms. You can think that you're just feeling great, but you're eating these foods and you can be causing some microscopic damage and not really knowing it. It's kind of like, you know, heart disease. You don't really have symptoms of heart disease until you drop dead of a heart attack. So you can have some real damage happening to your gut without really having symptoms. So I recommend most people, very rarely do I let a patient continue to eat gluten unless they just feel amazing, but that's pretty rare, to go gluten-free, because you're not really going to go without any nutrients from eliminating gluten, but there's so many benefits that you get from not having it in your diet. So gluten, that's a protein that's found in wheat, for people who aren't familiar with that, and it can cause some major inflammation and damage to your digestive tract. So people would say, okay, well, why is this so much of a problem? We've been eating these foods for, you know, thousands of years. Well, as Thomas O'Brien says, you know, Dr. O'Brien, you know, the bread that Jesus Christ ate is not on the planet Earth anymore. You know, this is a different kind of animal from what we're used to having because of hybridization and genetically modified foods that are happening now. And so gluten is no longer the same that it used to be. So the gluten content that's in foods is exponentially more than it once was. That's why we have, you know, delicious bagels that are nice and chewy and fluffy. I mean, that's the gluten content that makes it have that kind of consistency. And it's tasty, but it wreaks major havoc on your gut.
Mm-hmm. And then what about, you know, vitamin, mineral deficiencies? Can those be related to poor gut health? And how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am very passionate about digestive health, but I'm also maybe more passionate about nutrition. Nutrition is what brought me to this form of medicine. I love talking about food as medicine. And I love, you know, customizing diets that are going to give the most healing that you can possibly have with every single meal. That's great and all, but if you're not going to absorb your nutrients, then it kind of defeats the purpose of a perfect diet. So really optimizing absorption is super important, obviously, for energy, to give you all the nutrients you need for healthy thinking and, you know, brain function and mood and all of that too. And so having digestive malabsorption definitely contributes to deficiencies in your diet. So some of the most common ones, because I test nutrient deficiencies for every single patient, which is a blood test through a lab called SpectraCell. So the main deficiencies that I would say that I see, zinc is one of the biggest ones. So zinc is a mineral that is really important for immune health. That's why, you know, usually when people get sick, they'll pop a bunch of zinc or zinc lozenges, you know. So zinc is important for immune health. It's also essential for healing up tissues, so healing up like your ligaments, your tendons, your skin. And so when you're deficient in that, it's kind of like a cycle, you know. If you have damage to your gut, you're going to get deficient in zinc. And then if you're deficient in zinc, then you can't heal your tissues, and it goes on and on and on again. So that's a real important one that we supplement with when someone has malabsorption, is getting their zinc levels back on track. Vitamin A is super important for the health of your skin. That's why when people take Accutane for acne, yep, their skin tends to get better. You know, it's kind of a toxic amount of vitamin A, but that's the reason why it works. So that's another deficiency that we see a lot of. Good sources of that, obviously liver. I'm a huge fan of liver, so that's a really nice food source. But you obviously got to heal the gut before you're just going to assume that your body is going to absorb that. Mm-hmm. What other deficiencies? Vitamin C. Vitamin C is huge. That's your adrenal's favorite vitamin, is vitamin C. So it's kind of similar to zinc in the way that it's necessary to heal tissues. That's why you see, like, skin creams that have vitamin C, for example, you know, like added, you know, like vitamin C serums and stuff like that. So, it's healthy for your skin, but it's also healthy for your digestive tract. So when that's deficient, you can have some problems with your gut too. So those are kind of the main ones. The other thing that we see a lot of times too, and I'll see this in blood work, is low protein in their blood. So if you're not absorbing your nutrients, oftentimes you're not absorbing protein as well. So it's the same kind of thing with that cycle, is that you can't break down your proteins enough to absorb them. But if you don't absorb your proteins, then you can't heal your body tissues. So it's mm-hmm. kind of a vicious circle that happens.
So we'll get into how to actually heal your gut here in a second. Lauren, I'm so sorry. I totally forgot to ask you at the beginning of the show, like, how you got into this, because I've known Lauren for so long and we talk all the time. So I know this, and I've been on Lauren's show a couple times to host her. So tell us, how did you get into natural medicine?
We just got so excited by this topic. We just jumped right into it.
I know.
Well, gosh, it's been such a long journey of how I got to where I am, but let's see. I think there's a lot of different reasons why I do what I do. One is because I really have the sympathy with my patients. I get what they're coming from. Having problems with digestive health, I've had a lot of issues myself back in the day. Like I told you, I used to just pop, you know, antibiotics like they were popcorn. So that's just, I love my mom so much, but she didn't know any better, you know? I mean, she thought that she was doing me a service. And so I would have things like strep throat, you know, different infections. And we would, you know, acne, I had really bad acne in high school. So that's just the main treatment that I would do. And over time, it really messed me up. My digestive health, my thyroid just got totally screwed up. And, I found myself in high school, you know, 30 pounds heavier than I am now, with a broken out face. I was tired. My hair was falling out. I was cold all the time. I was wearing a jacket all the time. I was, you know, like I didn't really have many boyfriends in high school. I had friends and I was kind of in the popular group, but it was just because, I don't know, I think everybody just kind of saw me as a friend, but I didn't really like have that high school experience that I always wished that I had, because I didn't feel very good. And so I really sympathize with that for my patients a lot. So I think that's the first thing, is just being able to understand what it's like as a patient perspective. And then I also just really wanted to make sure this never happened for my friends, my family. I just wanted to learn this stuff so that I could be empowered to really protect people. So I went to doctors for many years as a Kaiser patient, and they had no answers for me. They couldn't tell me anything that I could do beyond just taking medication. And I would ask them, what's something I could eat? Is there any kind of food that'll help heal my skin? Or, you know, is there something I should be eating that will give me more energy? Or, I mean, what can I do about all this? And they just would, you know, here's your Accutane, just take this. And bless their heart, they didn't know any better. You know, I'm sure if they knew better, they would have helped me. So I'm not like bitter like that, but I just felt like they weren't given the right kind of information to help me at the time. So that's why I went on a rampage to learn this stuff for myself. And it wasn't until I found a naturopathic doctor and I worked with her for my own health that I was miraculously healed from many of my ailments. And I dropped 30 pounds pretty much without changing my diet or exercise. I felt better. My hair stopped falling out. I had energy. My skin improved. You know, and it's amazing because my skin got better without treating my skin.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't use Accutane anymore. I wasn't using the antibiotics. And my skin just over time got better. And so it just shows the power of healing your body from the inside out. And then before I decided to go to naturopathic medical school, I had the opportunity to shadow an amazing doctor in Denver, Dr. Mark Carney. And he's actually been on my show before. We did a show on water fasting. And genius, total genius. Like, this guy's like a walking encyclopedia. And I was able to just witness him healing patients left and right using natural treatments. So I was a major believer after that point, and I knew this is exactly what I was meant to do, and I've never looked back.
Awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
So speaking of skin health, let's get into healing the gut. I'm actually going to read this question I received from Jessica on Facebook. She said, I want to know what steps to take to heal the gut, diet and supplement-wise. I'm also very interested in how digestive issues cause skin issues because I struggle with both acne and eczema.
Yeah. And this is Jessica?
Yes.
Okay. So first thing, Jessica, is I would say to just stop looking at the skin. You know, ignore the skin for now. I know that's really hard to say because that's what people see, and that's kind of putting your face to the world or your skin to the world. But really, you want to just put the skin thing aside and work on healing your body. And then the skin oftentimes is the last thing to improve. So sorry to say that, but you're looking for long-lasting relief rather than just treating your symptoms. So that's the first thing. There's some pretty good research that we know where there was a study that looked at 13,000 adolescents, and they had acne. These kids had acne. And what they found was that these kids were way more likely to have constipation than the controls. So that's just showing kind of the connection between the gut and the skin. And, you know, I don't know, Jessica, if you have digestive kinds of symptoms, but if you're having these skin problems, I would look at the gut. I'm a really big believer in doing stool testing. I run a stool test on almost all my patients because we always find something. It's like maybe 1 out of 10 times we don't find something to treat. So
which one do you use, Lauren? And what is it test for?
Yeah, so I run a couple different labs. I've run BioHealth. They're really good about finding H. pylori, which is a really commonly missed bacteria. I'm also just starting to run more Doctor's Data stool testing. I really like Doctor's Data because the way that they test, they do a lot of cultures, and then they also do a sensitivity. So they'll see what you have in your gut that's abnormal, and then they'll run some tests on it to see which herbs or which medications are effective for that. So that's a really cool portion of their test that they do. So you can actually get some guidance on how to treat the patient.
Mm-hmm.
So stool testing is super important, I would say, for Jessica. And then you want to make sure you go to someone who's running the right kinds of labs, though, because you could go to your, you know, primary care doctor and they'll run what's called an OMP times 3, which is an ova and parasite. So that's just a fancy term for collecting your stool a few times looking for parasites. The ways that they test oftentimes can be not the most accurate, so they can miss a lot of things. So that's why I think spending the extra money and doing the more thorough testing is worth it, because if you're going to collect your poop, you might as well get the accurate test with the hassle. So so Jessica, I'd say to get a stool test and just see what's going on in your digestive tract. You know, you gotta get specific on treatment. If you have a parasite versus a bacteria or a yeast, it all has a different approach with that. So that's the first thing. If you're not on a good probiotic, definitely take a good probiotic with a nice spectrum of different kinds of bacteria in it. And also test for nutrient deficiencies too. I mean, you could have a deficiency in zinc or vitamin A or some of the other nutrients that we said that are contributing to your skin problems.
And then, Lauren, what would you say would be some general gut healing things that people can do?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Well, let's say you've gotten to the root cause. You know, you've identified what's actually contributing to the problems. That's the first thing. You have to remove the cause. You know, if I give someone a bunch of gut healing herbs and the reason why they have it is because of stress or because of birth control pills, then it doesn't really, it's not very effective.
Right.
That's the first thing, is get to the root cause and eliminate that. Other kinds of treatments, I love slippery elm. So slippery elm is an herb that, when it's made from the bark and it's made into a powder, it makes this really amazing, like, kind of thick, jelly substance when you add some water to it and you stir it up, and it's just like healing to your digestive tract. So you can actually eat that like cereal, kind of. So if you guys just want to Google slippery elm gruel, G-R-U-E-L or U-L-E, I think, you'll find some really cool recipes on how you can make some slippery elm powder. And there's some good research against behind slippery elm of healing ulcers and different sores. It's incredible. The slippery elm, marshmallow root is amazing, and glutamine is great. Licorice is wonderful. These are all really amazing healing herbs. Fish oil, so, you know, good fatty acid blend, I would say, with some good, you know, omega-3s. I use Nordic Naturals, but there's amazing, you know, fish oil companies out there. So you just want to make sure you're getting one that's really clean and not, you know, packed with mercury.
Mm-hmm. You brought up probiotics before. So, well, first of all, what are probiotics? And, you know, how is putting bacteria in your body a good thing?
Yeah, I know, right? So gross. We live in such an antibacterial world. Like, why would you want to take bacteria? That's disgusting, you know? So bacteria is your best friend in your gut. I mean, you are 10 times more bacteria than you are yourself. So kind of crazy when you put it into perspective like that. You have literally like a brick's weight of bacteria in your colon. So that's, it's like 5 pounds of bacteria. And that's actually healthy. It's not like you want to get rid of that. And so you want to have good bacteria in your gut. And it's a symbiotic relationship. So it basically means they like you and you like them. So it's like you have a tenant living in your apartment, you know, and they're maybe they cook for you and make you delicious treats. Like, they like you, you like them. It just works really well. It's a good relationship. So you want to foster that good relationship. So the good bacteria, in terms of like what kind of probiotics I like a mix, and I think it's good to rotate it. You know, I don't think it's necessarily, if you think about it, you have, you know, millions of kinds of bacteria. You don't want to just take one kind of probiotic and just assume that's going to do the trick. So I'm a fan of rotating it, maybe every month or two, changing to a different kind of probiotic. What else about probiotics?
Well, what should you look for when buying a probiotic? Like, can you just buy any from the drugstore? Like, what do you look for?
Yeah, it's a good question. So there's three main ones you want to look for, is lactobacillus, and also you want to look for bifidus, and then Saccharomyces boulardii. So those are kind of the three main ones, but you want to look on the label and see just a blend of a lot of different bacteria. So I think it's good to have just a nice multi-strain product. And then just rotate it.
And how many do you look for? Like, how many billion cultures?
Mm-hmm, at least 10 billion, but, you know, 10 billion to 25 billion is kind of a good daily dose of that. But depending on patients, I mean, sometimes I need to dose people like 300 billion, depending on what's going on with them.
And then what about food? Can you get your probiotics from food?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is before, you know, back in the day, before we had capsules, we had to resort to food or something. So, I know, what would we do without capsules, you know?
Maybe you and I pieces. Don't know.
Yeah. I know, I could take like 30 capsules in a handful. It's really sad. The good bacteria in food is huge. So fermented foods like sauerkraut, kimchi, you know, if you tolerate yogurt, I'm a huge fan of yogurt if your body does well with it. Goat yogurt is a lot better tolerated than cow's yogurt for a lot of people. Having a little bit of fermented foods every day is very, very beneficial to your digestive system. Now, some people actually get worsened from that. So I know there's some research looking at people who have issues with histamine. So if you have like allergy problems, sometimes sauerkraut can actually worsen that. Some people who have SIBO, like the small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, some of the fermented foods can exacerbate them a little bit. So just kind of play with it and see how you do with it. Everybody's really different.
Thanks for bringing that up. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
What about prebiotics? What are those?
Mm-hmm. So just like, you know, you like to eat certain foods that keep you nice and happy, your bacteria needs food too. So they don't just sit there and do nothing. They like to party, and there's certain things that make them really happy. So foods that make your probiotics happy are called prebiotics. So things like their very favorite food under the sun is Jerusalem artichoke. That's like their chocolate. So Jerusalem artichoke is their favorite. They also love onions. What are other foods they love? They love garlic, asparagus, kind of like the farty foods. Those are the foods your probiotics like to eat. But you have to go slow with that. I prescribed Jerusalem artichokes for a patient once, and it gave her a lot of digestive upset. So you need to start really, really slow.
So let's talk about your favorite topic, poop. Lauren and I actually did a show on poop on your radio show. So if you guys want to look that up, it is somewhere out there. I'll
pooping
post it on my website.
Just Google Pooping 101, I think we call
was
it.
Was that what it was called? Pooping 101? Okay. So what should our poops look like? Like, why is this important to even, you know, talk about?
Yeah. Well, I did just Google it. It is Pooping 101 with Dr. Lowe. So you guys can Google that and get your fill of pooping fun. So think of a submarine. That's how you want your poop to be. So you want a big, healthy poop where it's formed. It's not clumped. It's not sticky or pasty. It doesn't have any, you know, blood or mucus or, you know, we can get very graphic with these. But basically, you want a nice, long elimination, ideally one piece, and it shouldn't float at the top of the water. I know there's a little bit of controversy around that. Some people say you want your poop to float. I disagree. Because if you think about it, what makes something float? I mean, oil, if you pour a bunch of oil in some water, it's going to float. So if you have a hard time digesting your fat, your poop tends to float. So I think that's actually a clue of some malabsorption. So yeah, just a nice, one long, beautiful piece. That's how you want
and
to
then look. If you do have issues, like if it floats, for example, what do you do about that? If you're not absorbing your fat.
Yeah. So one thing you can try is chewing your food. Most of us don't chew our food at all. We just typically inhale our food while we're driving to our jobs and just hope for the best. So stop and sit down and smell your food and think about your food and listen to it cooking and just take it all in. I mean, your digestion starts with your thoughts. So that's called the cephalic phase of digestion. So you have actually four phases. And your intestinal part isn't until the one of the last phases, actually. So you want your brain to be tuned into eating. So that means without distraction, sitting down and eating your food. I think it's 40% of your hydrochloric acid is released even before you take a bite. That's ideally. So think about that. I mean, if you are eating without even thinking about your food, then you're missing out on 40% of your stomach acid. That right there can cause bloating, problems absorbing your nutrients, you know, bloating poop, probably all the above. So that's like kind of a no-brainer, is just sit down and think about your food and chew it. Chew it until it's a paste. You want to, like, chew it until it's not even really, like, solids anymore. So that's the first thing. The other thing you can do is take some digestive enzymes. So pancreatic enzymes are great. Let's see, what are some good brands? What's a good brand from Thorne? I think it's called Biogest, right?
We have Biogest, but we also have Plantozyme. Plantozyme has more of the enzymes in it, like the protease and lipase and all of those. And actually, I was going to ask, do you recommend digestive enzymes kind of for everyone? Because I know some people have the thought that they're covering something else. Like, how do you decide when you work with someone, you know, which way to go with that?
Well, if someone doesn't have a gallbladder, we'll put them on some, you know, some support pretty much forever. So, like, if they have some sort of condition like that, then for sure. But generally, no. I mean, we'll start with chew your food and relax and eat in a, you know, a chill environment, and then we'll think about doing some actual supplements. But if we're, you know, doing some testing and we see that they have some raging gut problems, then we'll jump in and do some HCL on some enzymes just to take some of the load off of their gut. So just depends on the person.
So that BioJust, it has the HCL, the pancreatin, ox bile, pepsin. But then the PlantEzyme has like amylase, protease, lipase, cellulase, lactase. So when would you recommend one versus the other? Obviously, like PlantEzyme is vegetarian, the other one's not. But aside from that, you know, when would you use something with someone?
Yeah, I mean, if they have floating stool, I'd probably start with just the enzyme. And if they have bloating, though, I would do the BioJust, which has the HCL in it. Because that's one of the biggest things. If you find after you eat a meal and you look pregnant, you feel like you have a food baby after you eat, then you're probably not making enough stomach acid. So that's something we'll just start right off the bat. And it's amazing. Like when you have enough stomach acid and you eat a meal, not only do you not look pregnant, but you have so much more energy because you finally get the nutrients from your food. It's amazing.
I want to go back to gas and bloating in a second, but I just have one more poop question. What about undigested food?
Chew your food. You can't really have undigested food in your stool if you chew it completely, if you think about it. You know, like if you have big whole pieces of corn in your poop, then you probably didn't chew. It's kind of a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. we can add in some more enzymes and stomach acid is probably, you know, other things that are going on with that.
So back to the gas and bloating. So today I was visiting some pharmacies, and so when I was trying to come up with questions, I just asked them, what are the most common questions you guys get regarding this? And so people come in with, you know, they have gas and bloating. They don't know why. They say nothing has changed. So what could this mean?
Okay. So they come in, gas and bloating, nothing has changed whatsoever.
Well, that's what they say. Who knows if that's true.
Yeah, but I know. And the first thing I would ask is, when's the last time you were on antibiotics? People forget. Oh, yeah, last month, actually. I had a sore throat, and I was put on antibiotics. Or I had a UTI, and I was given, I don't know, Cipro or something. So that happens a lot. The other thing, too, is a lot of times people will say that ever since they went on a vacation, like a cruise or a trip around the world or something, they haven't really been the same since. They might have actually picked something up during their travels. That's a pretty common thing that we'll see too. And there's an incubation period. So meaning like, let's say you go to Mexico, you eat some funky, you know, I don't know, tacos or something. And then maybe you have a little bit of a diarrhea thing going on, but then you're fine for like 3 or 4 weeks. And then you notice problems starting. Well, when your problems start, you don't think that it's Mexico related because it's been almost a month. But there can be an incubation period between, you know, when you actually ingested, you know, the parasite or whatever until it actually is the full size thing in your gut. So that's something to look into is what's the history. Has it been a recent gastroenteritis, recent antibiotics, other medications too. And then also too, I mean, maybe they're under more stress than they used to be. When you're under stress, I mean, we already talked about the leaky gut issue, but if you're under stress, your digestion literally turns off because you don't care. Your body doesn't care about digesting your meal when it wants to get the hell out of there. You know, like whatever kind of real or perceived stress that your body has, it's going to be responding to that, not to the recent, you know, salad you just ate. So that's another thing, is to really tune into the stress that people are going through. I would say that is probably the most common issue with bloating is the stress. They're just not absorbing their food and it's just fermenting.
Right. And then, of course, we can't forget food sensitivities, which is kind of an obvious one. But let's have you explain that a little more.
Sure. Well, we talked about gluten. The other problem, too, is when a person has a gluten issue, oftentimes it comes along with a dairy intolerance as well. So if you've had gluten sensitivity for many years and you've eaten gluten for many years, then that's caused a whole host of problems to your digestive tract, to the lining. And then when you have that happen, then you have all these other food sensitivities because you can't absorb those, or you can't, break down those foods appropriately then. If I were to take a sample of your intestines and zoom in on it, like with a microscope, in your small intestines, you have these little finger-like projections. They're like tentacles, basically. And they increase the surface area of the mucous membranes in your gut. So it increases your surface area so much. It's like 150 times more surface area than your skin. So it's amazing that your body has this ability. And so with this, it absorbs way more nutrients than it would if it were just basically a flat, you know, layer of mucous membranes. But the problem is that if you have gluten sensitivity, for example, and that's wreaked havoc to your gut, it wipes that into, you know, shorter finger-like projections. And then you have less ability to absorb your nutrients because you have less surface area. But what also happens, too, is now you can't make enzymes that are released from those villi to break down dairy, for example. So, like, the lactase. You can't produce the lactase to digest the lactose, and then, boom, you're now dairy intolerant. So that's how the food sensitivity can go hand in hand. So should you drink lactate milk? Is that the solution? Or should you maybe take out the gluten, heal the gut, and then maybe dairy won't be a problem down the line?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it's kind of obvious.
No, Lauren, what is the answer?
okay, well, then maybe I'm just kidding.
Let's talk about acid reflux for a second. Isn't Prilosec like one of the most prescribed medications?
Yes.
Which people never should have taken it for longer than, you know, people take it for years, but what happens with that and what is the cause of acid reflux and how can you actually treat it?
Yeah, so, well, most people think that acid reflux is caused from what?
High acid. Too much acid.
High acid. Exactly.
Yeah.
Too much stomach acid. So, therefore, we should give you Prilosec to get rid of the acid, and then we've healed your problem. Okay, well, what's the root cause? Why do they think you have too much acid? Well, it's actually the opposite, usually, which is kind of crazy, that they're worsening the problem, but they're taking away the symptoms. If you have acid reflux, you want those symptoms to go away right away because it hurts a lot. You know, it's like a fire
mm-hmm.
in your stomach
mm-hmm.
that is very painful. So I totally get why you want to take the medication for it. But it's actually contributing to the problem even more. So what happens is let's say I were to feed you a meal, you don't chew it up appropriately, you don't have enough of the stomach acid or enzymes to break it down, well, then you have this fermenting, putrefying mass in your stomach that then bloats up. And then that will push up into the esophagus, and it's really acidic, actually. Even though it's not as acidic as we want it to be, it's still way too acidic for the esophagus, so it hurts. So that's, if I were to give you some Prilosec, then your symptoms go away, and you feel awesome, and you're like, wow, this is great. You keep taking it. Well, what happens is you don't actually break down your food completely. So number one, you're having toxins that are building up in your digestive tract, which is contributing to, you know, dysbiosis and, you know, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth and leaky gut and deficiencies and on and on. And the other thing, too, is, yes, besides having the toxins, well, you're not actually breaking down your food completely, so you're not getting all your nutrients. Like what we said earlier, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin A, calcium. So, you know, being on these drugs contributes to osteoporosis, so now you have different, you know, risk factors for fractures and things like that. So it's not a good thing. And also the other two nutrients you have to have stomach acid for is folic acid and B12. So now you are deficient in B vitamins and you're tired. Those two are very important for having enough energy. So it's not a good situation. And oftentimes just simply taking something like apple cider vinegar or maybe some digestive support, like we said earlier, can take care of most of the symptoms.
Hmm. Are there any foods that people with acid reflux should avoid?
Grains.
Hmm.
All grains. So this is something I found is that when you have acid reflux and you eliminate all grains from your diet, most of the time in my experience, the acid reflux just goes away right away. And, you know, usually they would think, oh, I should take out maybe chocolate or wine or, spicy foods or tomatoes. I found that grains is way more effective than those foods. And you
wow.
can eliminate those too, but the grains
yeah.
are way more effective, I think.
Very
mm-hmm.
interesting.
Yeah.
So something that you've mentioned twice now, the small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Can you explain what that is?
Okay, so regarding bacteria in the gut, there's situations where you can have bad bacteria, like bacteria you don't want in your gut at all, and so then we have to treat that. There's other times where your bacteria, even the good stuff, is in the wrong place at the wrong time. So that's what can happen with SIBO is The bacteria from your colon, or your also known as your large intestines, it's the same thing, can migrate up into the small intestines and make a home there. And that's where you can have all different kinds of problems. Like the main symptoms of SIBO are gas and bloating, abdominal pain, and constipation or diarrhea. So sounds pretty familiar. I mean, that's IBS basically. So mm-hmm. And we know that 50% of people who have IBS also have SIBO. So it's very much connected. And you know, a lot of things can contribute to that. Things we mentioned before, like antibiotics, what we just talked about, the proton pump inhibitors. 50% of people on long-term PPI treatment also have SIBO. So those are very much connected. And also, too, there's a valve that's between your small intestine and your large intestine called your ileocecal valve. So that's meant to be shut for the most part, besides letting things – I mean, it's a one-way street. You know, you're supposed to have stool basically move from your small intestine to the large intestine. But when things can go the opposite direction, then, boom, now you have SIBO. So certain nutrient deficiencies can cause problems with that. So calcium, for example, is one, and also magnesium. Those help your ileocecal valve work properly.
What about someone with Crohn's? Would that be the same type of treatment as, you know, someone with IBS? Are there any differences there?
Well, the difference is that Crohn's is an autoimmune disease and IBS isn't necessarily. So there can be some differences on actually what's going on kind of on a biochemical level. But with Crohn's disease, there is more of a correlation with SIBO as well. So I do think that anybody who has any kind of digestive disorder at all, whether it's IBS or even in kind of any kind of IBD, which is inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, all of them should be tested for SIBO, I think, because of how commonly misdiagnosed it is. So it's
and how
worth
do you test? How do you test for that? Is that on the BioHealth or Doctor's Data test?
No, it's actually a breath test. So
okay.
Commonwealth Labs is one of the labs that does it. Also, the school I went to, National College of Natural Medicine, they test it in-house there too. So they may be able to do testing for people from a distance as well. It's not an expensive test. I think it's like $100-$150 to see if this is going on. And it's so helpful to diagnose that if that's what's there.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about SIBO, before I forget, there are so many different diseases that are associated with SIBO. So, I mean, things that you wouldn't even think of, like restless leg syndrome. Like, how random is that? But there's research connecting those two. There's also liver disease, hypothyroidism actually is connected to SIBO, fibromyalgia, migraines even, rosacea. There's some research suggesting rosacea and SIBO are connected, and also rheumatoid arthritis. So it's, crazy.
Very interesting. So I know, we know that testing is important, but for someone listening who, you know, maybe has some gut issues going on, but they don't necessarily, you know, have a doctor like you to go to or don't want to do the testing for whatever reason, what are three things that you would recommend to improve gut health overall?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Number one, change the environment that you eat your food. So eat in a relaxing environment, chew your food, enjoy your food. Like really let it be like a celebration when you eat. Look at your food, appreciate it, just let it be a whole experience because that's going to change the entire environment in which you eat. That'll change your entire biochemistry, just relaxing and eating your food in a chill environment. That's mm-hmm. the most important thing first and foremost. The other one is add in a great probiotic. So off the top of my head, Jarrow is a great company. If you want to maybe pick up one from Whole Foods, take a probiotic every single day. That'll cover a lot of your bases. The other one is go on the paleo diet. You know, the paleo diet right away takes out the most common allergens, which is gluten, dairy, corn, soy, sugar. That right there will eliminate a lot of your problems. So you do those three things. If you still have problems, then you should probably get help from a doctor because maybe you have a parasite.
Right. Oh, let's talk about that a little bit. Parasites.
Yeah.
What are the, how do you know if you have one? What does it do when you have one? Like, how do you even know? When do you suspect that? And then what do you do about
it? Yeah. Well, the main parasites that I typically see in my practice, Blastocystis hominis, that's a pretty funky bug. So sometimes we can use herbs, sometimes we have to use medication. It's about 50% effective with herbs, and then we'll have to use maybe antiparasitic medication. I see a lot of H. pylori, which is not really a parasite. It's actually a bacteria, but that's a real common one that we see. I'd say probably at least half my patients have H. pylori, and that is a bacteria that causes ulcers and also stomach cancer. So you don't want to have that if you have it. You want to get rid of that. And I treat that very effectively with medulla tea. So it's just basically an herb. We get it from Africa. You don't have to be on antibiotics, which I don't know why gastroenterologists don't use medulla tea, because it's been 100% effective in my experience. So it's incredible. I'm off topic. So back to parasites. Besides Blastocystis hominis, let's see, other ones that we see, giant amoeba fragilis is one, Indolimax nana. It goes on and on. But there's like hundreds, thousands of parasites that are potential, you know, problems for people. I would say that the main thing that I usually do is natural treatments. I use herbs. So the main kinds of herbs are wormwood, golden seal, olive leaf extract, garlic, Oregon grape. These are kind of the main ones, uva ursi. So usually it's about a 45-day treatment. I'll treat my patients twice a day for that, and then we have them retest the stool 6 weeks later, and it's usually gone.
And that's really fast.
Yeah, usually gone.
That's great.
Yeah, so how would you know you have a parasite? You really wouldn't unless you have a test. But if you do find that your problem started after maybe traveling, you're going, you know, having some funky sushi or something, then it's probably pretty obvious. But otherwise, you may have no gut symptoms at all. I mean, you might not have gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea. Maybe you just have a rash, or maybe you just have insomnia. You know, parasites tend to be awake at night, so that might be the cause of your difficulty sleeping. They may not necessarily know for sure.
Very interesting. Do you have any other thoughts that you want to talk about? Anything else that you see, you know, with your patients related to digestion? I know we talked about a lot of stuff.
I know. I can't believe we've almost been talking for an hour. I would say that just the last little thing is, I know we talked about autoimmune disease. It's really important if you do suspect autoimmune disease that you do get tested for that, because it is so rampant now. And if you catch it early, you can prevent a lot of problems down the line. So we didn't talk about testing for that, but there's a lab called Cyrex Labs. And if you, you know, are working with a doctor who's open-minded, mention that lab to them and have them test you, because you want to actually get some screening done and see if autoimmune disease is, you know, happening for you, and if it's affecting various parts of your body. And if that is the case, then you have to make sure you heal the gut. You know, going back to our topic, is that you have to heal that if you're going to stop that in its tracks from continuing to progress. So just really important stuff. I'm very passionate about autoimmune disease, because I think there's so much we can do from a naturopathic perspective for that. And you don't have to be on steroids. You know, you don't have to be on immunosuppressive drugs for the rest of your life. Most times. So there's a lot you can do, and just really empower yourself, learn about it. Your body is incredibly resilient, and it heals itself when you get out of its way. So just learn what's going on at the root cause, and just support your body, and it'll heal itself. It's pretty miraculous.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Lauren. That was really, really interesting, and hopefully helped a lot of people. You guys can learn more about Lauren at drlaurennoel.com. And if you're in San Diego, or even if you're not, you can reach her at Shine Natural Medicine. So thank you so much. This was super fun, as always.
You're welcome. Of course. Glad to be here.
All right. Have a great night, Lauren.
You too. Bye.
All right. Bye. All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We're going to take a little two-week hiatus. But when we come back on October 7th, I'm interviewing the Bulletproof executive, Dave Asprey. I don't know if you've heard of Bulletproof coffee. It's really good. I just started drinking it the last 2 weeks since I met Dave recently, and it's coffee with butter and medium-chain triglyceride oil, which sounds crazy, but it's really yummy. I'm actually going to be interviewing him and his wife. They wrote a Better Babies book. So I'm really looking forward to that. And then I have some really awesome guests coming on the show, you know, in the next few months, like Diane from Practical Paleo and the Caltons from Rich Food, Poor Food? I think that's what it's called. So thank you so much for tuning in. Again, Evelyn from ElevateYourEnergy.com. Have a good night.